Do not adjust your radio. You know what time it is. Ross, you ready?
Oh yeah.
I got to do it. I got to play this. You know. Here we go. You ready? Get it started. What? You know how we do it.
Time to talk some sports, baby.
Time is now. The time is now. What's up, folks? How you guys doing? Welcome, of course, to Talking Sports, the 12th man. Andre Peterson along with Robert Ford. Today is Wednesday, January the 25th. We got a lot of stuff to get into. So without further ado, let's go over the show list, the topics. Got a packed show. We're going to talk about Joe Pa's legacy. We're going to recap some championship games. Analyze the coaching hires from the last couple of days. And I'm excited about this. Robert Ford, he's going to reveal his mock draft. I'm very excited for that. Obviously, talk about some top five college basketball and our top five teams for the NBA. And if we have some time, we'll jump into the biggest sports stories for 2011. I may want to table that for next week, Robert, whenever we have a slow week. But let's go ahead and jump into it. Rob, you doing all right?
Oh, yeah, doing great, man, doing great. How was your week?
Week is great. So let's go ahead and jump into this. So you want to talk about Joe Pa's legacy, if you will. I know I don't want to keep talking about this and kind of, you know, just everyone's been talking about this in media, but anything you want to talk about before we get to the meat of the show?
No, let's kind of jump right into the Joe Pa situation here. Yeah, if you want to get go ahead and get the phone number for the callers to call in and what got some opinions on that. And but definitely, let's kind of get into that a little bit here first.
Good deal. The guest calling number, as always, it's 424-243-9519. So we'll talk to you guys first and call in. We'll get your thoughts, and we'll get the party started.
Yeah, this situation here at Penn State has been, I guess, you know, really disturbing and really sad. And then, of course, with the Joe Pa's debt, you know, taking football away from him, I think has got into a quick debt. I think football was his life. You know, definitely made some mistakes with this situation, not coming out and revealing it. And, you know, what shall we remember Joe Pa for? You know, I know he's done a lot of good at the program. I'm sure he's done a lot of good impacting a lot of young men's lives. And, you know, of course, this cloud over him is, you know, is what a lot of people, unfortunately, are going to remember him as. And so it's really a sad situation, you know, all around. You know, definitely prayers are with him and his family. But, you know, the sad part is, you know, he made a mistake, and for the most part, that mistake is what he's going to be remembered as. And but, you know, I think hopefully a lot of people will realize a lot of the good that he also has done with that football program and with, you know, helping young men, you know, grow into men as well. And just, you know, once again, just a sad situation, you know, all around. I don't know what your thoughts are on that. But, you know, unfortunately, I think most people want to remember the cloud, you know, that's happened, you know, with the Sandusky situation.
Yeah, I was going to say, it's pretty unfortunate because, you know, hopefully if you look at his whole body of work, he's done more good and everything. So hopefully we'll remember him in that aspect because, you know, obviously such a tragic way for him. And I think that definitely contributed to his passing because, you know, as we talked about before the show, it's one of the situations where here was a guy that, you know, once he stopped coaching, that what else was for him to live on, you know? So, you know, obviously prayers and stuff go out to his family. Like I said, I know I have a lot of people that are fans of Penn State, and they have nothing but good things to say. So hopefully, you know, after we kind of get over the initial shock of everything that happened and just kind of realize, you know, look at his body of work, and realize that he's done a phenomenal job as far as, you know, raising young men and doing what he had to do. And obviously, you know, the Sandusky thing, it's still going to – we're still kind of getting into that, so I'm sure more stuff will come out. But let's kind of think of the good as opposed to one thing that went wrong. So that's kind of my thoughts and everything too. So
yeah.
So there you go.
Think about Bill O'Brien taking over the football program. I know we. I don't think we've gotten to that. You know, current offensive coordinator in New England. What are your thoughts on that hire, bringing in Bill O'Brien, the NFL guy, to come and take over the program? He's going to have a lot of challenges with recruiting, you know, with the scandal hovering over Penn State right now. What are your thoughts on that hire?
Yeah, I mean, like you said, he's definitely going to have a lot of challenges. And I think, you know, Penn State, at their heart of hearts, I mean, they obviously wanted an Urban Meyer. But just, you know, I think they had to settle with who wanted to take the job. I think offensively, obviously, he's got a leg up, but he's definitely going to try to do a lot of what he can to try to bring some stability back to the program and try to make sure that the program is going to be on the up and up. So he's definitely in for a battle. I don't necessarily know if he's the right guy at this juncture. I don't know what his body of work is, so I'm kind of curious to see how that plays out. If you want to give it a grade like we did last week, I'm going to grade it, I guess, like a C. But, you know, obviously we'll see how everything plays out. And, you know, like I said, I just don't know enough about Bill to see his body of work, you know. So, I mean, it's not like he's like one of these hot shots. Go ahead.
You think Penn State is taking a risk with this hire? They're not going to be rewarded with this hire.
I think it's definitely a risk, only because we don't know enough. I mean, like I said, I'm not in the circle. I don't know enough about his body of work to say this was a good hire. I mean, if he was – you know, more or less like a, you know, somebody that we've kind of heard about. You know, now granted, it could actually turn out to be a good thing. So, but at this juncture, it's kind of too early to tell, and he definitely has a lot of stuff to kind of, you know, deal with. So, but we'll see how that plays out.
Yeah, I mean, I think it was definitely a very interesting hire from Penn State's standpoint. To go to the NFL ranks to hire Bill O'Brien to come take over the program. And he's going to have his hands full. And what's very interesting is Penn State National Signing Day here is Wednesday, February 1st, but yet Bill O'Brien is still coaching the Patriots. I mean, how can he be focused on a Super Bowl when his next coaching job, National Signing Day, is a week away? You got to really wonder, you know, where is his focus right now? Is it on Penn State or is it on the Patriots here for the Super Bowl? But I agree with you. I think this is going to be more of a risk by Penn State as a more than a reward in return. So I definitely think this is a risk hire. Michigan and Ohio State, both right now in the top 10 in recruiting. And Penn State is going to take a while for them to get up to that level with this scandal taking place right now. So I think, and plus with his focus on the Patriots right now, this is going to be a wasted recruiting year for Penn State as well. So I think they have an uphill climb. Let's kind of get into some of these NFL coaching hires here in the last week. We got about four big-name hires that we can talk about here. Of course, today we have two new ones with the Colts hiring Chuck Pagano, former defensive coordinator of the Baltimore Ravens, and Dennis Allen, 39 years old, defensive coordinator of the Broncos this past season, taking over the Oakland Raiders. Risk or reward?
Dennis Allen, I got to say this is a reward pick, only because, and the ironic thing about Dennis is that he was actually part of both of our clubs. He was the assistant defensive line coach for the Saints from 2006-2007. He's also the defensive assistant for the Atlanta Falcons, the 2002 to 2005. So, very energetic guy. And I think with him, this is the first time, I'm sure you heard about this, Robert, that this is the first time that the Raiders have hired a defensive guy since John Madden. And I only that was like in the 1970s or something like that. Late 60s. So, you know, obviously they're bucking a trend, if you will. And, I guess you went in there and did a great job blowing away Reggie McKenzie with the interview, and he got the job. So I'm actually proud of the Raiders because they didn't do something that we thought they were going to do. So I think this is a reward for them. So I don't know what you what your thoughts on Dennis Allen are.
Well, yeah, I know he was a defensive secondary coach for the Saints here a few years ago. He was on the Super Bowl team as well. He was a defensive secondary coach for the Saints during the Super Bowl season. Sean Payton speaks very highly of him. And, of course, this past season he did a great job with Denver Broncos, coaching, being a defensive coordinator with the Broncos. I still think it's a little bit of a risk. He's only 39 years old. I know there are a lot of people that speak highly of him. And I just think he's made a leap to head coaching a little bit fast. The last person that I can think of that made that leap kind of quickly was Raheem Morris. And you see what kind of year he just had this past season. And so I think the Raiders are taking a big risk with this hire. I would like to see Dennis Allen get a little bit more seasoning before he jumped into the head coaching realm. But don't blame him for getting hired. But I think from the Raiders' standpoint, I think this is a little bit of a risk for them. And Chuck Pagano, I actually would have liked to see Indianapolis hire an offensive guy for the simple fact that you're ready to draft a young quarterback, Andrew Young. Andrew Luck. they're getting ready to draft Andrew Luck. So I would have thought that I would like to see an offensive-minded head coach take over the Colts and to tutor him. So Donald's going to have to hire a really good offensive coordinator to work with Andrew Luck. So I think even the Colts, I don't like that hire either. So I'm going to go with a risk. I think the Colts are taking a risk. I would like to see them go with an offensive mind as well right there.
Yeah, just for those that are calling into the show, once again, the number is 424-243-9519 to give your thoughts. And we've got about 18 minutes left of the show, Rob. I kind of agree with you regarding Chuck Pagano. I mean, definitely this to me, and obviously we know that Peyton's no longer going to be going with he's not going to be there, obviously, with the $28 million bonus that he has to sign in March. This is kind of like the writing on the wall if it wasn't there. But, definitely hiring a defensive guy, it kind of signals a new era, if you will. So, and I think that's kind of a shot at Peyton because Peyton is more or less used to getting his guy and maybe more of an offensive guy. So they're kind of shaking up things in Indianapolis. And, I agree with you. Hopefully you want them to draft a guy that has some type of offensive prowess. So obviously let's keep an eye on that situation to see who Chuck Pagano hires for his offensive coordinator, because, you want somebody that's going to be able to relate to quarterbacks, that's going to be able to develop a quarterback. I mean, not that Andrew Luck needs a lot, but to kind of help him make that transition into the program. So, the Colts fans, I'm from Indianapolis. It's kind of one of the situations, too. You may have to suffer a year, but the future looks very bright. But, obviously Andrew Luck's going to be a talented guy, so hopefully they'll put the pieces around him and they'll continue to help him grow to be a great quarterback.
Yeah, the hire I really like is the Dolphins hiring Joe Philbin as a new head coach. I think that's a great hire, getting someone that's worked with Mike McCarthy and Aaron Rodgers. And so I think the Dolphins are going to be rewarded with this particular hire. And I know this is a guy that Tampa Bay was even high on, so I'm actually a little happy that he won't be in the division. But I think he's a great offensive mind. And so he's the guy of the three head coaching hires that's happened in the past week that I think the Dolphins are going to get rewarded the most. Of course, they still need a quarterback. And I know if Peyton Manning plays next year, it's going to come down between the Dolphins and the Redskins. And I personally think the Dolphins is a perfect fit for Peyton Manning if he does play next season. And so he can walk into a situation where he's got a Brandon Marshall or Reggie Bush. He's got a few weapons on that team. Maybe give him another weapon or so. And a great offensive line already. And down there in Miami. And in my mock draft, I had them positioned to take another offensive tackle, Riley Reiff from Iowa. And so you book in him with Jake Long. You got a solid offensive line there. And those Iowa offensive linemen, Kirk for France is one of the best offensive line coaches in college football. And so I think that could be the perfect situation for Peyton Manning if he's healthy enough to play, which is still a big question mark right now. But I think we both agree he definitely will not be with the Colts on next season. So I don't know what your thoughts on Philbin.
Yeah, like I said, everything you said, I agree wholeheartedly. That's a great hire. I had mentioned same thing. I'm glad he's not in our division with the Bucks, and you nailed it right on the head too. So I think this is reward as well. And basically, yeah, I think it's a great opportunity for Peyton. There's a couple teams out there that you've probably heard that have been in the Peyton Manning sweepstakes, be it Arizona. You've heard a little bit about New York, the Jets, if you will. I heard a little bit about the Redskins. And I think he's definitely going to end up in Miami, as you said, because the pieces are already there. They're a quarterback away. Not sure if Matt Flynn is even going to be in the process, but I think Philbin probably, you know, you get a guy like Peyton to kind of step in. Now, with that being said, let's do a risk-reward on Peyton Manning. Do you think that he will actually be able to play next year? And then if you are a coach or a GM, do you want to bring him in and you think he's going to do some things for a couple of years? What's your take on Peyton Manning? Is he a risk-reward, or is he a risk or a reward in your mind?
Well, in my opinion, if the doctors approve that he can play, Peyton Manning still got 3 or 4 years. If the doctors approve that he can play, I mean, he will be in a reward for whatever team that he goes to if he can play, obviously. I mean, that's still a big question mark. I mean, I still think that's more of a 50-50 proposition if he's going to be able to, you know, get doctors' approval to even play again. But if he can, most definitely, there's going to be teams lining up to sign him. I mean, you saw Brett Favre played almost 40 years old. Peyton Manning, I believe, is 35, 36 years old. I think you can get a solid 2 to 3 years out of him still. And so I definitely think if he can play, the team that signs him will be rewarded. I'm not saying they're going to win a Super Bowl, but I can definitely see a playoff team. I mean, you saw the difference between the Colts this past season, just how valuable Peyton Manning is. I mean, you went from a playoff team, a team that went to the Super Bowl 2 years ago, to now a team 2-14 without him. So there's definitely a value to Peyton Manning. So I would definitely say a team will be rewarded if he's healthy enough to play.
You don't think it's a risk with his neck or anything like that? And then also, do you think that they're going to draft a young quarterback to have them prep whenever Peyton is getting ready to, you know, have the end of his career, if you will? Even though I hate saying that, but just kind of get your thoughts on that, too.
Well, I'm assuming we're talking about the Dolphins here. Right now, the Dolphins have the 9th pick in the first round. So they won't have a shot at a Robert Griffin III. So if they are able to secure Peyton Manning's healthy, I think Matt Moore is your backup. You may draft a quarterback in later rounds. But, you know, other than that, I don't think they're, you know, going to have a first-round quarterback pick unless they trade down and pick up a Ryan Tannehill or something like that, which is a strong possibility. But you know, I think if they're able to secure Peyton Manning prior to the draft, I don't see them drafting a quarterback in the first round at all. I think they'll maybe draft one in the later rounds to develop and maybe see if they can get their quarterback in the future, another draft or two.
All righty then, you heard it here first. Robert Ford, he is saying that Peyton Manning is a reward. So I kind of agree with you, Rob. I was going to say more of a risk because you're not sure what's going to happen with the neck, because a lot of injuries like that, those are hard to come back from. One or two hits, you never know.
Well, I think if he's not healthy, they're not going to let him play.
I agree. I mean, like I said, so that's mm-hmm. one of those things. I mean, you know, you definitely got to see how everything plays out if he's ready. And I think he wants to prove to everyone, too, that, you know, especially the Colts, if you will, that they made a huge mistake. So, that's some motivation for him as well. So, you know, I agree with you wholeheartedly.
But I personally believe the coach is making the right decision to turn the franchise over to Andrew Luck. You know, Peyton Manning is still a question mark, as we both said. So I think the coach are doing the right thing. Unfortunately, that's just the nature of this business. The 49ers had to let Joe Montana go. And it's just that time where they have to, you know, you have an opportunity to be secured the quarterback position for another 12 to 15 years with Andrew Luck. I mean, just think about that. Peyton Manning was drafted at 98, and now you got an opportunity to draft Andrew Luck. I mean, you're talking about an organization that could be set at the quarterback position for close to, you know, 20 to 25 years, or even close to 30 years, depending on how long Andrew Luck is able to play. And so, I mean, they have a great opportunity to secure themselves at the quarterback position for many years to come. The last coaching hire we're going to tap into here really quick is Steve Spagnuolo. I know last week's shows we talked about some of the coordinator hires, of course, with your Falcons, with Dirk Cutter and Mike Nolan. We're going to get into my Saints here a little bit. And Steve Spagnuolo getting hired as defensive coordinator. think it's a risk or reward for the Saints?
As much as I'm a Falco fan, I think that's a reward for you guys. He was the de facto top defensive person coach out there. So the Saints, the rich keep getting richer. We're going to definitely have to be on our P's and Q's. The thing that you have to worry about, or not worry about, but I am curious to hear, was he the main guy that put together that New York Giants defensive line? Is he the main guy behind that? Or was he forced it and getting lucky getting those players? And obviously, I think he coached them up and did a great job with that, too. So, you know a little bit more about that, Robert. So kind of get your thoughts on that, if he was more of a victim of good success or good fortune, if you will.
Well, I think it's a combination of both. I think any great coordinator has to have great players. And so I think it's a combination of both. With the key stat that kind of popped my attention is the 2 years prior to Spagnuolo's coordinator with the Giants, Justin Tuck, in his first 2 years in the league, only had 2 sacks in 2 years, averaged 1 sack a season. The 2 years that Spagnuolo became defensive coordinator, Justin Tuck's sack totals went up to 22 in 2 seasons. Now, you can obviously say the player just matured in the league, but I think Spagnuolo has something to do with that, putting those players in the right position to succeed. Obviously, the Saints don't have the defensive line personnel that the Giants have, so, I mean, he would definitely have to get those kind of players. And, you know, he likes these long, rangy guys to be defensive ends. And he's not a blitz-heavy guy like Greg Williams is, who's moving on to St. Louis. He's more of a zone blitz guy when he does blitz. So he's not going to be very rarely will he send more than 5 or 6 guys. Or at times, Greg Williams will send as many as 7 or 8. And so he's more of a rush four, but when he does blitz, he's more of a zone blitz guy. And I think it is a reward for the Saints. And but I also, you know, of course, you know, I don't want to sound too biased as a Saints fan, but I think it is a reward. But yeah, I think he also needs to get the personnel similar to what he had with the Giants, and that could take a little bit of time. And they have a couple of pieces that they could probably work to get to that level on the Saints roster, so we have to wait and see what he can do with guys like Cameron Jordan and Martez Wilson and Junior Collette, and see if he can develop those guys to those kind of pass rushers. And I know we're kind of moving along quick. You know, we got a short 30-minute show. We still haven't recapped the championship games from this past weekend. And I tell you what, 2 great football games. I mean, unbelievable games. We couldn't ask for anything better as football fans for championship games, even though I'm still a little hurt, my Saints out of it, but, you know, got to deal with it. And two great football games. Firstly, though, Baltimore Ravens coming up short with a missed field goal at the end of the game. I don't know if you had a chance to hear Ray Lewis' speech in the locker room at that game. Incredible the way he lifted up the team. And but it's definitely a heartbreaking loss for the Ravens. I think they played the Patriots toe-to-toe in that matchup.
Yeah, I mean, and it's funny because, you know, I got to give you some credit because you came on the show and you may have been a little too soon. You're talking about how sore you were that the Saints had lost. And same thing, I know the fans out there on the West Coast are still kind of hurt. It may be a little too soon to talk about this, but definitely hold your hands up high, 49er fans. You guys played a great game. And the future, once again, looks great. I mean, you know, you have a young team, and Alex Smith was given a 2-year offer, if you will, but we'll see. Keep an eye on them if they make any moves to the quarterback position as well. And hopefully no more death threats for Kyle Williams there. But, you know, just a young team.
Just a game, people.
Just a game. But, you know, like I said, I definitely had a feeling that whenever those 3 turnovers happened, it was definitely going to be tough for the 49ers to come back. You know, I don't think that if the fumble didn't happen or whenever the ball hit his knee that the Giants are going to be able to go on the field. So that was a momentum-changing play for them. And they were able to capitalize. And the same thing with the Ravens and the Patriots. You know, Ray Lewis had a great speech basically saying that we win as a team, we lose as a team. And there's a couple plays out there. You know, it didn't really come down to that kick. I mean, everyone wants to remember the last kick, but if they would have made some plays earlier in the game, it wouldn't have to come down to that. So, you know, obviously, you know, I think Flacco did a great job. We'll have to talk about this in the future as far as these fifth-year quarterbacks and where they're going to turn the corner because, you know, Flacco has been under a lot of criticism this past season, and I think he actually played pretty well. You know, he's got a great defense, and there's certain things that you got to take the next level, obviously. But, you know, great games, and, you know, as much as to my fans of the Patriots and the Giants, I wasn't really a fan of seeing a rematch in the Super Bowl, but, you know, obviously it was a good game for the championship games.
Yes, and just what are your early thoughts on the Super Bowl? I know we've got another week and a half before the matchup. I'm kind of leaning toward the Patriots. I think I just think that certain offenses like the Patriots, the Saints, and the Packers, even though the Packers and the Patriots are outdoor teams, I think all three of these offenses are made to play in these domes. And with this game being in Indianapolis inside a dome, I just think those offenses are hard to stop indoors. And that's kind of why I'm slightly leaning toward the Patriots. I know there's some question marks if Rob Gronkowski is going to be healthy or not. But I'm kind of slightly leaning toward a 3-7 point victory by the Patriots in this game.
Yeah, I concur wholeheartedly. I think that it's going to be a revenge game for the Patriots. I'm sure they didn't forget about the fact that they were undefeated and the Giants came in there and beat them in the last 42 seconds of the game. And Bill Belichick is going to have a lot of things to do. He's one of the better coaches, and obviously Brady's one of the better passers. So Brady didn't play that well in that Super Bowl. And as much as, you know, I'm always surprised at Bill Belichick, because if you look at the defense, you don't think that they're going to be able to stop what the Giants have with that receiving core. But flip side, I mean, you know, the Giants have a great defensive front, but still, I don't know if their secondary can put up with what the Patriots have. So it's definitely one of those strength on strength once again. So it's going to be an interesting game, but I'm leaning towards the Patriots as well.
Yeah. Really quick, give me your top five teams in college basketball right now.
Top five, I'm going to have to go with Syracuse. That's a good shout out to Mark, even though they lost to Notre Dame this past week. Missouri, Kentucky, Ohio State, and Kansas. What about you?
I still have Syracuse number one. Even though they dropped at number three in the polls, I still think they're the best team in the country. I'm going to go Kentucky number two. I had Missouri up here until they lost tonight, so I dropped them out of my top five. I still have Carolina number three. I know they're lacking on the defensive end right now, but I think they get it right by the time tournament time comes around. So I have them number three, Ohio State, Jared Schellinger number four, Kansas number five. Give me your top five NBA teams.
Top five NBA. I'm kind of disappointed in my Hawks, man. They kind of let me down. Oklahoma State, this is off the top of my head. Miami, I'm sorry, Oklahoma State, hopefully I got that right. Miami, I'm going to go also with the Lakers, and I'm going to go with my Hawks. So that's my
the Lakers. How do you put the Lakers in the top five? They're not even top eight in the West right now.
I think they're going to do some things, man. I'm not a Lakers fan. That's what I'm saying. But, you know, I'm just top of the head, man. What about you? Go ahead. What you got
okay.
for me?
I'm going to go Oklahoma City right now, number one. They seem to be playing the best basketball in the league right now. I have Chicago, number two. I have the Heat, number three. And I'm wondering if this Miami Heat team is better without Dwayne Wade. That's up for debate. They seem to play better without him. And it seems like Bosh even plays better without him. So that's interesting.
Yeah.
I still have your Hawks in the top five. I've been number four right now, even with the loss right now. And number five, I tell you, a team that's quietly playing extremely well is Philadelphia. Lewis Williams and Andre Iguodala, Elton Brand, Spencer Hayes. These guys are quietly playing some really good basketball in NBA right now. So right now I have number five.
Yeah, we're wrapping up. So real quick, for those that want to tune in, don't forget to click on the link after on the show, blog.radio/12thmansports. And we're going to jump into, we got about another 50 minutes off air, so check us out. We're going to go over Robert's mock draft, and we're also going to probably recap that next week live on the show. Get your topics, call us and say who you want for your team, and we'd love to hear your feedback. But other than that, it's always a pleasure talking to you guys. Anything you want to say, Robert? We got about 20 seconds to wrap up.
If I people join us next week, same time, same channel. We're going to review my mock draft.
Thanks, people. We'll see you guys same time, same channel next week. And we are jumping off there. Robert Ford. So, like I said, I know I give you a hard time, but I gotta give you some credit for putting together the mock draft. So, this is your first mock for the year, for 2012. And as you said, this is going to change based upon the future free agency and a lot of trades. So I'll go ahead and I'll open up before you. And we all know who's going number one, but let's see what you got going on, and let's see, get some comments, and we'll go from there.
Well, I tell you, yeah, number one, I think it's a no-brainer. I mean, Andrew Luck is going to go to the Colts, but I think things will start getting interesting really quickly in this draft with the number two pick, because the Rams keep the pick. You know, you have a debate in that war room. Do you take Matt Leal or do you take Justin Blackman? And then there's another debate. There's going to be some teams that want to move up to number two to draft Robert Griffin III. And those two teams mainly will be Cleveland and Washington. And I think, I think there's going to be also the Matt Flynn sweepstakes, too, you got to keep in mind. I mean, one of those two teams could get involved in the Matt sweepstakes and feel like they don't have to move up in the draft. But based on what we have right now, I'm going to say, we can't project trades. So I'm going to keep St. Louis in that number two pick. And my personal opinion, it's going to come down to Justin Blackman and Matt Khalil, but I just think a guy like Jeff Fisher is a guy who likes to win in the trenches first. And that's kind of why I have been going the Matt Khalil route at the number two pick. Even though I think the Rams need some playmakers. And I don't know if you had, I didn't send you my second round mock, but the first pick in the second round, I had the Rams taking Alshon Jeffery, wide receiver from South Carolina. And so far, I had them stacked up to get Matt Khalil in the first round and Alshon Jeffery in the second round where they can get the playmaker as well. But I just kind of think that a Jeff Fisher, if Khalil and Justin Blackman is in their war room, they have equal grades, I think a guy like Jeff Fisher is going to go for a guy in the trenches first. That's just my personal opinion. I don't know what you think on that.
Yeah, I mean, like you said, if that happens, if they go and they get Khalil and they can somehow get Alshon Jeffery from South Carolina, I think everyone's high-fiving everyone. That's a perfect draft in their mind. I agree to the point where if they make a trade down with one of those two teams and they acquire either another talented person or whether offensive piece, they may still go with, like you said, it's one of those 1A, 1B. But if that happens where they can still get the offensive tackle and get Alshon Jeffery, I think that's an A for that particular draft for them, so.
Yeah,
I agree.
Totally agree.
Wholeheartedly. Yep. Go ahead.
Minnesota here. I think Minnesota is a team that's hoping they can get their hands on Matt Khalil. I think that's the guy who they will be targeting at number three. But, of course, with the Rams taking him at number two, they'll go ahead and take Blackman at three, which is not all bad because you give him Christian Ponder another weapon to work with. You get Adrian Peterson healthy next year at some point. Probably won't be completely healthy until the second half of next season. But you get a guy like Justin Blackman, pairing with Percy Harvin, still need to replace Sidney Rice. So I would say, even though Minnesota, I think, personally would like to have Khalil, I think they'll be just fine and happy with a Justin Blackman there, number three. And number four, this is where I currently have Robert Griffin III going, to Cleveland. So, and it's basically all but says that Colt McCoy is not the starting cornerback in the future of Cleveland. And so I don't know if you trade McCoy or do you keep him as a backup, but I definitely think Robert Griffin III will be the pick for Cleveland right there. What's your thoughts there?
Yeah, wholeheartedly agree. They'll be sprinting to the draft table with their card, obviously, to Roger Goodell, if that happens. But, it depends on if anyone's going to move in front of them. That's the only question you got to worry about. But I'm in total agreement with you, 100%.
Yeah, number five, Tampa Bay. This is another interesting pick. I know there are some draft analysts out there that seem to think that Tampa Bay will go with Trent Richardson right here, which wouldn't be a bad pick by any means to pair with LeGarrette Blount. But I just personally think they will go Morris Claiborne here. It's about time to start replacing Rondé Barber in the second half of the season. That Tampa Bay's defense was just getting eaten alive. And I think Claiborne is the best corner in the draft. Great athletic ability. And I think you're adding a guy who's got potential to just lock down one in the field. A lot of people don't realize this. The Honey Badger has got all the praise at LSU, but the best defender on that LSU team was Morris Claiborne. Teams just did not throw his way. And when they did, he was picking them off. But he was clearly, if you watch the film, clearly the best defender on that team.
I'm kind of on the fence with this pick only because I'm not really sure who's going to be the coach of the Buccaneers, because if it's a coach that maybe is more of an offensive guy, that's where you may lean towards Trent Richardson, if you will. If he doesn't think that LeGarrette Blount is a guy, I think he's a downhill runner. So it depends on who the coach is. But I mean, I can go either or.
That's a good point.
I mean, the defense definitely, but it's definitely up in the air, if you will. But keep going.
Yeah, definitely a very good point on there. And it looks like Mike Sherman is becoming a favorite to get this head coaching job now with the Chip Kelly thing falling apart. So, it looks like Sherman could be the guy. I know he's getting the second interview. And I'm going to go out on a limb and say he's probably going to be the next coach for Tampa. But with Claiborne going to Tampa, I have Richardson going at the next pick to the Redskins. And I know the Redskins are in the market for a quarterback. I know they would like to trade up and get Griffin III. But like I said, we can't really predict trades here, so we're going to go ahead and put Richardson here. And if they don't get Robert Griffin III, I think the Skins, maybe a player with the Matt Flynn sweepstakes as well. So I think between Griffin III and Matt Flynn and Peyton Manning is another option, as we mentioned earlier. But I'm going to go Trent Richardson here, and it will give them some nice group of running backs, Roy Helu, and give them a nice mixture of running backs. But Trent Richardson would definitely be the feature back if he was to wind up in Washington.
I'm kind of scared about, how Mike Shanahan had like taking first round running back. So we'll see how that plays out, if that holds true. But I'll let you finish there. He likes getting those running backs from the third, fourth round. He's not a big first round guy. He's like, I can get any guy to come in my one cut system. So we'll see how that plays out.
Yeah. And Jacksonville, Quentin Coble's defensive end, North Carolina. Definitely could probably come in and start day one in Jacksonville. Best defensive lineman in the draft. Solid pass rusher and plays your run really well from the defensive end position. So Mike Mularkey will be getting a defensive guy early on there. And number eight, Carolina, is over. It gets a little tricky as well. I got Dre Kilpatrick going there. And I know we just got the marijuana incident with him. And my thinking is that his talent will still prevail, and teams will do their due diligence and see what happened in that incident. But you're talking about a team that has the possibility of pairing Drake Kilpatrick or Chris Campbell. Those would be two physical opposing corners, both in size and in solid corners, that they have an opportunity. And I know Carolina needs to improve the defensive line, especially the interior line. But get an opportunity to pair Kilpatrick with Chris Campbell would be a sight that we probably don't want to see in the NFC South.
No. Nope, I'm right there with you. Rob, you still with me, Rob?
Okay. Yes, okay.
Okay, good.
And number nine, Miami, we talked briefly about him with Riley Reiff, offensive tackle from Iowa, pairing him with the Jake LaHorne, with a possibility of getting Peyton Manning. That could be a solid offensive line and go with a pretty solid defense already in Miami. And number 10, Buffalo, Courtney Upshaw. Buffalo, of course, employs a 3-4 defense, and Upshaw could be a pretty solid edge rusher. And that 3-4 defense could be second year in a row that Buffalo picks a guy from Alabama. Of course, we'll go with Marcell Dareus on last year. And I know Buffalo could still use another offensive player or two to help out Ryan Fitzpatrick, but a good defense here. Kansas City, Devin Steele, defensive tackle, Penn State. Kansas City has drafted quite a few defensive linemen in the first round the last few years. But they still haven't quite found a guy that, that's a difference maker on that defensive line. And Romeo Crennel is still looking for that fit. You know, you had Glenn Dorsey, you had Tyson Jackson, two guys that came out of college, very talented, but just still haven't lived up to what they would like to see out of those players. So Crennel goes for another defensive line. I'm trying to see what he can do up front. Seattle, Melvin Ingram, defensive end, South Carolina. And you can kind of interject your thoughts here on any of these players. And but Melvin, Seattle quietly, I don't know if you noticed, but they have been quietly improved in the second half of this past season. And Pete Carroll has quietly improved that overall roster. But this is another team, in order to get that next step, is going to need a quarterback. And this could be a perfect opportunity. There's some people that think Ryan Tannehill could move up all the way right here and get picked, or this would be an opportunity for a team like Seattle to trade down and pick a Ryan Tannehill as well. So that's just something to watch. But it looks like Tannehill will be a first-round pick. It's just a matter of where in the first round. I don't know what your thoughts on that.
Yeah, I mean, I'm kind of curious because, you know, I don't know what the problem is with Carolyn. You know that they're a quarterback or two away from doing some serious damage because they've got, obviously, Marshawn Lynch. They've got some receivers. And I don't know if Charlie Whitehurst can't beat out Tavares Jackson or what the deal is. But, you know, I'm in full agreement with you. You know, they got to make their decision as far as who the guy is leading to the next level. You know, they keep getting stronger defensively. And as you said, you know, Pete Carroll is acquiring a lot of talent. So, it's going to be a situation pretty soon where people are going to say, hey, you're going to have to start producing here. So, you know, I think he's going to have to make a move and try to say, okay, let's hand the reins over to somebody that can literally get us done. And I think we've already seen enough Tavares Jackson, unfortunately, and to know that he's definitely not the answer there. So, you know, we'll see. We'll keep an eye on that situation as well.
Let's skip down to our teams a little bit. I know we're kind of wrapping up here. I have your Atlanta Falcons at 55 taking Ronnell Lewis, outside linebacker, Oklahoma. And you know, you could be wondering why you think the Falcons are taking another linebacker, but I'm sure they're still in need of another backer besides Lofton and Sean Weatherspoon. I don't know what your thoughts there.
Yeah, you know, I think we're probably going to look at the best either offensive tackle and or defensive player, you know, either a DT. I hate to say we're looking for the best player available, but there's a couple of situations that we're looking at. We're looking at a free safety. We're looking at an outside linebacker. Yeah, on the strong side, that's a great pick. Like I said, whether there's an offensive tackle, offensive guard, and or quarterback. So those are the areas that we're kind of looking at. If I'm a Falcon fan, so, you know, best available, if he fits, go with it. So that's my thoughts on the situation.
I have a corner going in the pick right before Atlanta, Detroit, Josh Robinson, cornerback from Central Florida. So I have him going to pick right before Atlanta. I have an offensive guard going on the pick right after Atlanta. And at 56, I got Pittsburgh taking Brandon Washington, offensive guard from Miami. And at 59, I have my Saints taking Brandon Boykin, cornerback from Georgia.
I like that pick if we can get him too. So that's one of those guys that's definitely done a great job at Senior Bowl. I'd love him to be in the Falcon uniform, no offense, Rob. But, you know, we'll see how that plays out. So,
well, based on my mock, he'll be available when you guys pick. So we'll kind of see. I think Ronnell Lewis has a slightly better grade. But so it'll be interesting if you go with the corner or you go with the guy with the higher grade.
Yeah, like I said, Rob, we got about 30 seconds for those that are listening in and it took the time. Thank you. Once again, call us in the show next week, same time. We'd love to hear from you. We'd love to hear your feedback on these picks and on the draft. And we'll talk to you guys next week. Robert Ford, Anything, any last
thing?
Good night,
people.
Join us
next week, same time, same place.
Same time, same chase. Thanks, guys. Talk to you later.